Strap in, operatives. This is Go Back, your all-access pass to modern-day RPGs, loaded with bullets, backstories, and a whole lot of bad decisions. And here are your mission leaders, Sean and Harrigan.
Hey, Harrigan. Hey, Harrigan.
Hello, Sean. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Hanging in there, man.
So all you can do.
Yes, I'm a brachiator, so, you know, I'm good at it. Sean, what have you been doing in the role of espionage in Delta Green this week?
I've been reading Holy War.
And Holy War is?
I have a link in the sit rep, but it's the latest release from Arc Dream Publishing, the latest scenario.
Is it a scenario or like a big ass, you know, big beefy one? Or is it like a 48 page, 32 page?
It's not a 48 pager. I haven't checked the page count. McClory, friend of the show, mentioned that it's like 111 pages. It does say it is for advanced players and handlers. In the beginning of the scenario, which I thought was interesting, which I thought, I also told Phil, then it's probably not for me.
Oh, I did. I was in that chat. I saw that.
Yeah.
Without spoiling, why do you think they say that?
There's a lot of stuff going on, I think, maybe. I don't know.
There's many moving parts, you mean?
Well, I'm very much the scenario, for folks that aren't in the know, it's been released. You can get it at Drive-Thru RPG. You can order it, and then you can pre-order it in print. And you'll be able to get the, if you order it in print from Arc Dream, you usually get the PDF with it. But it's been recently released. If you are a backer of Conspiracy, the crowdfunding campaign, then you should get the PDF for free, just so you are aware. And that's how I got it. I'm reading it, and the beginning is very much, here are the things that are, like, here's the major players, NPCs.
The factions.
Yeah. Well, and kind of NPCs. Cosmic Core, that's in the mix. And then it goes through a pretty long timeline. So it goes through each one and who they are, what they're doing, what their objectives are. Then there's a small brief timeline. I haven't even gotten to the mission brief yet. And where?
So is it like 1 million BC, what is Yog-Sothoth doing?
Not, no.
Is it that kind of thing?
No, but it is.
Oh, that'd be a cool timeline.
Yeah. Well, and it's, yeah. I don't want to give too many spoilers. I think even if you pulled up the drive-through description, what it says is it's December 2001, as it like opens up the link. The convulsions of America's post 9/11 war on terror have only begun, but worse threats still lurk in the shadows. Delta Green knows. The gruesome ritualistic killing of Randall Tebbs outside Phoenix, Arizona bears unwelcome resemblances to a mass murder in 94 Chicago. Delta Green already has a suspect in mind, but the agents are on the ground only a few hours when things get worse. The suspect reappears only to destroy himself in a deadly explosion. The murdered victim speaks with the voice of a god. A trail of carnage leads across the country. It draws the agents inexorably to the city where the towers fell, the city where cruel powers converge, to New York, the city Delta Green has learned to fear.
Interesting.
Yeah. When Delta Green stumbles into a clash between the great old ones themselves, can the agents hope to survive?
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
There's the Holy War angle.
Okay. That is the Holy War angle. So it's like, what are these things doing?
And for listeners who may not know the lore all that well, yeah. New York is like thick with things going on in the role of Delta Green throughout the years.
Right.
All kinds of stuff happens there.
Yeah.
Cool. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So I started reading it. I think because of it's across the country and the trail of carnage and keeping track of all that is probably where like it gets, you know, a handler has to be able to come up with things pretty much on the fly and roll with it. But I don't know. We'll see.
I would call that lots of moving parts.
Yes, I would say so. Yeah.
Yeah. Tracking, timing, converging, diverging, all
right.
That kind of stuff.
Right.
Cool. And your own Delta Green game?
We were going to play today, and I put it off just because we have had to move it off the regularly scheduled program. So move,
oh, that's right.
Move up the day or slide the day. And I'm like, you know what? Let's just wait. So there's going to be a pretty big gap from the last session to the next
one. Like 3 weeks or whatever.
Yeah. 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 So that's that. I think that is all I have been involved in.
Cool.
You?
I keep meaning to get back into my Ian Fleming reading, but I haven't yet. Something distracted me. I vacillate to go back and forth when I'm, you know, in my too precious listening time. I go back and forth between audiobooks and podcasts and, you know, different things, you know, that I'm kind of just tuning into. And I get on a kick on something and I'll just listen to it for a long time, whether it's a specific podcast or whatever. So when I fall off the wagon on an audiobook, I will often put it down for months. And then, so I'm in that boat right now with the Bond stuff. But I will say, one of the things I picked up, you know, I think a podcast you and I both enjoy a lot, The Rest Is Classified. They've been cranking out content lately, and a lot of it is pretty topical around like what's happening in Iran and the Middle East. But they also did a four-part series, Sean, on the Battle of Mogadishu. So the Black Hawk Down scenario, if you've read the book or seen the pretty amazing Ridley Scott movie, they go into great detail on this podcast, and there's some really cool tie-ins to kind of the world of espionage and local resources and how you can and cannot trust the intelligence they're providing and some of the reasons why the intelligence might be bad. And, you know, everything from like when they're trying to hit, I forget if the guy's name is ID'd or something like that, the warlord they're trying to hit, they're trying to get his lieutenants, right, in that raid in downtown Mogadishu. That intel's good, but there's some intel before that that's bad. They just go into a great kind of breakdown of your informant might be lying to you. They might simply be wrong, or the intel might be 1 hour old and it's no good anymore,
right,
in a situation like that. So it's just a really cool breakdown of the entire operation that goes terribly wrong, right? But I highly recommend it for folks who are either fans of the movie or just, you know, think that's a kind of an interesting episode in American sort of, you know, operations and foreign policy type of thing. They go into a great treatise on how it affects American foreign policy for the rest of the next like 10 to 15 years or 20 years, where there's a number of situations where the U.S. normally would have gotten involved around the globe and they don't do it, especially in Africa. Like Rwanda is the first one they point to, where it happens only a year later, where there's this genocide in Rwanda and the White House has no stomach for sending in Delta Force and the Rangers and all the rest like they did in Mogadishu. So it's a really good listen. And I didn't realize there's a Netflix series, like a documentary. I shouldn't say there's a series. I think it's a single episode documentary. I need to check that out. Have you seen that?
I have.
How is it?
It's bonkers.
Yeah.
It's pretty bonkers.
Yeah. The whole thing is bonkers.
Yeah. I read Black Hawk Down.
Yeah.
Way back in the day. It's been a while, but I read it and then I saw that come. Then I watched the can't remember if I watched the movie first or the Ridley Scott movie, but I've watched that and I've read the book, and then the documentary I watched as well, because I wanted to look at the documentary, because obviously with movie kind of conversions can get a little kooky. So
yeah, I mean, it'll gloss over some things. They only have 2 hours of screen time typically and all that stuff, right? The other part that I found really, really interesting that does not come through in the movie, and I have not read the book, so this was news to me, was this was this, I think, the seventh operation like this, where basically U.S. Special Forces had developed this, you know, this playbook of they helicopter and fast rope in, they get the target, they do whatever they need to do, and they use a convoy, a rapid force to get in and out so they can extract them quickly, right? They've done this 6 times already. By the time they try to hit these guys or they try to capture these guys in downtown Mogadishu, and the Somalis, the warlords, it's a specific clan, is 100% ready for them. So in the movie, you see the kid with the cell phone, you see the burning tires. All of that is to set up to say as soon as they see choppers, they alert the whole city, all the militia, basically. So not only that, Sean, and you know this because you've read it and seen the Netflix thing, but they have buried or hidden caches of RPGs on rooftops and all over the place on the routes they think they'll use. So they're like it's a trap, basically. They're totally ready for it when they start executing the mission. So it's really interesting stuff.
Yeah, it's some of those ops are just insane. Just insane. I could not imagine being in such a hot box.
Oh, yeah, man. It's, yeah, they go into that as well, where, you know, the poor guys would go on foot from the site where they fast rope in and where the convoy then takes off, because they've got the first Black Hawk helicopter goes down and they try to redirect the convoy to it, right, to either pick up survivors or protect the dead or whatever. And then this doesn't come through in the movie either. When they send the force from the hotel, there's 60 to 80 guys on foot who go through the city to get to the Black Hawk site. Yeah. And they're the ones who make it, and they're the ones who get trapped overnight in that firefight where they take over the civilians' homes and all that sort of stuff, right? Yeah. It is wild. They are in 16 hours of combat. Like, it's wild what happens. So what I'm looking forward to is they give the same treatment to, like, the Maduro extraction recently. So I think there's some good episodes that they've dropped recently around some of the current operations and that sort of thing. So I'm looking forward to listening to that stuff. Other things, I've just had my head in. I know what I wanted to mention. I've been listening to this crappy old podcast, Go Bag, it's called. so when you dropped the last call-in show, something was striking me about Hoose's write-in that I think we missed.
Oh,
yeah. So, and we talked before the show about for regular listeners here, we know Hoose pretty well, and I think he mentioned prior to the show, or prior to even writing in, hey, maybe you could spend a little bit more time on the home scenes kind of thing, right? And then you and I talked about it, and then during the show, this is the episode that dropped just last Wednesday, you know, early July. What would that have been? What Wednesday would that have been, Sean? The 8th. The show that dropped on July 8th. I read his write-in, and both of us kind of missed the point just a little bit. What Hoose actually says is, I'd like to hear some vignettes for home scenes. And what you and I, or at least I was thinking, I shouldn't speak for you, I was thinking he wants a deeper treatment, like take a whole episode and do just a breakdown of a home scene. And the two of us were like, oh, we've kind of already talked about it and provided our perspectives. But when I re-listened to it, he's asking for us to do a vignette to showcase some of the things we talked about in the Downward Spiral episode that we did. Just thought I'd raise it up so that you and I can put some more thought towards it. That's all. And sorry, Hoose, if we misinterpreted what you were asking in your write-in.
These guys don't listen.
Yes. Here's the other thing that I heard in that episode when I listened to it or re-listened to it or whatever. You mention in your home game this thing that gets loose, and the agents end up using a vehicle to try and smash it and run it over. Right? There are actually rules for that. Did you use them?
There is, I think. I think so. I think there was something about. I don't remember if I used them.
They're kind of cool.
Yeah. I don't remember if I used them by the book. No, probably not.
Yeah, I don't know if we talked about them before when we went into the mechanics, but it's basically kind of a D6 or a 2D6 if it's like low speed kind of thing. But then it starts going like the hit point value of the vehicle, so the size of the vehicle divided by 2 is the lethality rating, up to 30. So it's and as folks will know if they know the game, like even if you don't make the lethality rating, you're still doing 2d10 damage kind of thing. So you could do significant damage with the vehicle. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, I was doing it. I think I was doing at least either 2d6 or 1d12. Like, it was just
yeah.
So I didn't nerf it much, but I did not. Look, I don't know if I looked up the rules, and I don't. It might have been one of those situations where I started. I'm like, oh, I don't know if they've got ramming damage from a vehicle. That's all right, fine.
Yeah, they do.
They do.
Turns out,
and I think I made a judgment call. Then during the combat, somebody might have looked it up, and we weren't that entirely off.
There you go.
And then we finished it, but yeah, I think that's how it worked.
Other than that, I think I'll save. I have been thinking a lot about Delta Green this week, and but I want to save it for what our main topic is, because I think it fits squarely into some of that stuff. So that's all I got.
All right, sit rep. Let's get to sit rep.
Give me the sit rep.
I'll put a link to Holy War that I have and started reading into sit rep. So if you're interested in going to purchase that or look at it, there'll be a link in the show notes. Excuse me, but Harrigan has something that he wanted to bring to our attention.
I do. I'm trying to find the actual link. Maybe I'll just wing it here. There is, and I think this is in the Delta Green Reddit community, if you know that subreddit, there is a user who is running what's called a relay writing jam. So, Sean, you'll provide the link to the Reddit thread, right? But
yes.
Let me open it up briefly here. What I'm trying to get is the guy's name.
It's Nathan Class 6, Nathan Class 99.
Thanks, man. So
makes me wonder what happened to Nathan Class 98, 96.
So Nathan is basically, it's kind of like a shotgun scenario where I think they use like a Google Docs platform to, you know, you submit to an email address and people submit their Google Docs in the end for the competition or the, you know, the judging kind of thing. But get this. So this is the part that's a little bit different here. The Relay Writing Jam, I believe what they're doing this time is you pick a location you know. It may even be like your hometown or something like that.
That's the prompt for this
show. Yeah, you write a prompt, and the prompt is going to be something that other people write a full adventure on. So you do two parts for the relay. The relay writing part is create a prompt from a location that you know well, your hometown kind of thing. So you provide some like locations, some ideas for things that might happen, and you submit that, and then you pick up someone else's prompt and you write like a scenario around it. So it's kind of cool. Have you seen this before?
I have not seen it before, and I was wondering what the whole prompt thing was, but I'm reading it now and it's like submit a teaser based on this year's prompt. And this year's prompt is something from your hometown. And then the second step is write a scenario based on someone else's randomly assigned teaser.
Yep. And then randomly assigned. Mm.
Yeah. And then, so, Ooh, that's a, you luck of the dice or, ooh, that's
yeah, I know.
No bueno.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really like the idea of the hometown thing though. Like I like that a lot. Come up with a, maybe it depends on where you grew up. My hometown is like, I got like many ideas. One of which we'll talk about later in the show. Anyway, you'll share the link. It's, you know, for those who are the creatives in the audience who are wanting to, you know, hone your chops in writing these little scenarios. There's, I guess, throughout the year, Shomer, we've run across like three or four of these now, right?
Yeah. You could be writing for Delta Green like throughout a year for sure.
Yes, for sure. For sure. I think that's all we had for sit rep, right?
It is, yes.
Do we have any encrypted comms?
I checked voicemail. I checked email. I don't believe so. If you have written in or phoned in or sent a smoke signal and we're not receiving it, let us know. try again the same channels.
Well, there's the call. There's the people know, you know, our handles on Discord if they're for those who are a little closer to us.
Yeah.
Or there's the email address, right?
Yeah.
Try again is what you're saying. Because we did have one situation where someone wrote it and we didn't get it for months.
Right.
So.
Right. Otherwise, let's get into the mission brief.
Have a seat. Let's get on with the mission brief.
All right. So this one kind of touches on what Hoos had asked and posed, which was, we have the working title as three things you'd do but haven't yet in Delta Green. In other words, given the season and everything we've covered, are there any newfound epiphanies we would have stumbled across or reconsidered as we, you know, in our own games, I guess, for the most part.
Right. So separate from, it was the same write-in, but I think separate from who's saying maybe we could see a vignette on the home scenes, he also said, what's changed in your perspective? What have you learned, et cetera, right, in the deep dive? And not to harp too much or drill too much on the write-in that who's put in there. But this was the whole thing where he's like, man, I like the deep treatment you gave it. I'd love to see a deeper treatment for a lot of different games kind of thing, right? To which I think we both said, yeah, awesome, and then balked by saying, I don't have time to do that for every game. Bottom line is, you've had this idea on the board for a while of, like, what'd you call it? Like, three things you want to do but haven't done yet type of thing.
Right.
So what are three things that still are interesting to us that we haven't experienced at the table yet or haven't been able to execute or whatever, right?
Play in a Delta Green game.
You haven't played in one?
Run a Delta Green game. No, I have. I think.
I gotta say,
but I don't play very often. Like comparatively speaking, it's not.
So maybe we can address that, but we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
How do you want to start this? You want to trade off 1-1-1-1? You want me to do all three? You want to do all three of yours? What do you want to do?
We could trade off and then and discuss each other's. I have two that are blatantly in my face.
So Sean and I have not shared what these are with each other.
We have not.
I believe one of ours will be the same.
He does.
I do. So it's a bet. I'll bet you lunch.
Harrigan posed that before we hit record. I know I have one that's probably the same for both of us. And I said,
when I see you in October and we have our traditional game pre-game hole lunch,
yes,
the day that I arrive, right, I'll buy lunch or you'll buy lunch. If I'm right.
Is that the stakes on this thing? Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
That little cafe we always go to.
Okay, fair enough. I'm going to guess it's, I know which one it is too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, if you start, we can get it out of the way or you can hold
it. You want
it
me
back
to get it out of the way and guess what I think it is? I think it's implementing the Outlaws in the program together.
Yes.
Nah.
Yes. Yeah. What you call two shades of Delta Green.
I do call that two shades of Delta
Green. So why don't you explain? Go on, and that is the one that we share.
Yeah. Obviously, it has to take part during a certain era of the game. And
yes,
that is right around 2000, I think, right? 2000-ish? 2010?
2001.
2001, yeah. Early years. The reason we kind of go 2000, 2001, because it's not... There are scenarios that are placed during that year-ish time frame, and it isn't... I don't think it matters because there's this gray area of whether the program is actually known or fully baked as much as it is in like 2015 or modern day 2026. But if you place it right around that time when the program starts to become more official within the U.S. government and some resources are actually dedicated to that, and then they either find out about the Outlaws or realize that there are individuals that have been part of the program when it was defunded and basically shut down back in the late 60s, the individuals, the Outlaws, they become, or the Cowboys and then the Outlaws.
Yeah, they're the Cowboys then.
They're the Cowboys, which is the cell, right? The cell makeup, so A cell, B cell, D cell.
I think that is actually the Outlaws in the 90s.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So we're kind of talking about three kind of eras. But going to what Harrigan's asking is to flesh this out is, which is funny because Holy War takes place in 2001, right? It's right after 9/11.
I don't want to call it Ground Zero for obvious reasons because there's some connotations to that in 2001, but
right,
it is Ground Zero for the program schism, kind of like now there's two of them, like that is when it happens, you know, in that 2000-2001 time frame.
And there's two NPCs in Holy War that are referred to as members of C-Cell, and I don't think in the beginning, I haven't read, so as of this recording right now, I'm only, I don't know, maybe 10 pages in, 18 pages in. So cut me some slack if it comes up later, but they reference two NPCs that their code names start with a C, and they don't say they are members of C cell. You just have to understand that they are or were.
Yeah. Well, that's the question.
Well, right. And
did
I don't,
they come in?
I don't know if later in the scenario, they flesh that out a little bit more or talk about it. In the beginning of the scenario, they also talk about to run this, you will need the handler's guide and potentially you could run an additional material through the conspiracy. Millennium, I think, is another one, if I'm not mistaken, that's coming out. And then another book that's not yet out. So references, like two reference books, yeah, that are coming out, because those reference books are going to cover factions, which play a role in this, and a couple other things. So anyways, that's why I'm like implementing Outlaws versus the program. So when I get to the briefing, I'm interested to find out who the briefing is for.
Yeah.
I don't know if I should owe you, since I guessed what it would probably be.
Fine.
We'll go Dutch. Fine. You can buy your own and I will buy mine.
I'll buy yours, you buy mine.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so we'll do that.
Fair.
Yeah.
Fair.
So I think that's a big one.
Yeah, well, what do you want to do with it that you haven't been able to do so far? Like, what is the interesting part of this that makes you put it on this list and say, this is something I want to explore?
I've been thinking about this, obviously, a little bit recently, and I've done that with Impossible Landscapes. I've implemented it, and you and I have talked about it, about, you know, this is what I would do.
We've talked about it a lot, actually.
Yeah. It's funny because I'll think of something and Harold going to go, oh, I would totally not do that. I would do it this way, and this is why, and then it makes more sense, and I go, okay. But I am also fearful that it takes the main scenario and, like, sidetracks it, where the characters are, oh, we have to go and figure this out. Now we're being solicited by this program or telling us we're not really part of Delta Green this whole time.
Oh, yeah. It's a whole focus, right?
Who have we been a part of? Now I got to go and find out. Let's go research. Well, wait a minute. Hold on a second. What about the thing that's, like, happening?
Yeah, you're on the job already.
Right. So I'm a little nervous about that. So that's why I'm more interested right now in creating, literally, I want to create a campaign or the world of Delta Green in my own vision, Harrigan. But I would like to do a homebrew setting called Two Shades of Green. And it's not to say that I wouldn't use scenarios, but I would want some of that interfaction play or dynamic. So there's times when we've talked about, okay, you're an outlaw who joins the program. You're a person in the program who was an outlaw who's working for the outlaws as an agent, kind of thing.
Right. There's a double agent angle here. There's all that stuff,
yes.
Right?
Yes. Yeah. That's where I would like to see things.
We are largely of the same mind. And, you know, I think maybe it hasn't come across in this podcast, but from my early days as a role player, when I ran a bunch of TSR modules back in, you know, 83, 84, 85, 86 kind of time frame, I went 20 or 30 years without running prepared materials, like written modules, what you would call pre-published modules back in the day. Remember that?
Yes, little, I do remember that.
Gaming and BS throwback.
Thank you for bringing it up and getting... So the joke is Brett and I on Gaming and BS would say, hey, why don't you run a pre-published module? And then we got raked over the coals for using the term pre-published versus just published.
And pre-written or whatever. Right,
or pre-written.
Like, yes.
Like, how do you pre-write? Yes.
So to return to Delta Green here, I kind of retracted from like pulled myself out of, like, I don't like a lot of written adventures, quite frankly, right? Have trouble remembering all the details, don't like where things go, don't like the railroad part of those modules. I mean, I had a great time running some of that stuff, but I spent many years developing my own content, right? The whole just house campaign, whatever you want to call it, right? The OSR turned me around on a lot of that by really, like, incredible creatives in that space showing, like, oh yeah, you think you're so good at writing adventure, Harrigan? How about this? And I'm like, holy crap! Like the stuff that's been put out in the last like 10 years or so for the OSR space kind of has brought me back around to, oh no, I like published adventures just fine. Some of these are super cool, and you just got to integrate them, kind of thing. When I turned to sci-fi mysteries, Delta Green horror, I find them back in that space where I want to write it. I want to be in control of like what's happening and the flow and all that stuff. Otherwise, you have to find, for the reasons you just pointed out, like, I don't know if those published adventures are out there, or operas are out there that involve these components of the two parts of the program interacting in a way that you and I think would be interesting, right? So I'm in the same, exactly the same boat where I'm like, I think I need to write this. I need to like lay it out myself. And it gets back to something we talked about, I think in maybe the faction episode, which is this kind of breadcrumb trail so that you introduce these things gradually. You're not doing the, you know, T-bone by a bus. Now you got to deal with this other issue, which protects against the issue you just raised, which was they're already on a job. But if someone now is trying to recruit them somewhere else, that's going to distract them and like do the whole, which if that's the, if you want that messiness, awesome. But if you don't want that messiness, be careful, because introducing it too early without teasing it and without like, I don't know, preparing for the reveal will just be disruptive. And suddenly you're going to have like the handler's going to be like, aren't you guys still working on the job I sent you on, kind of thing, which might be a good thing to do, but it also might completely like upend what the team was working on and what the players are enjoying, right?
Upend, man. I'm still having my buddy Joe that's like, well, if they've got it handled, we're done.
Right.
Like, why do they need us? Why don't we just stop? Like, oh, they've got it covered. Bye. And I'm like, dude, what? You still don't get it. You know, just because the program's involved doesn't mean your character's like, I got to shit can this because now, like, I was hired to do a job. And it's not that kind of game. You've got a bigger, higher calling because
So you can picture, though, with the players with the right mindset, you know you have to do the thing, right?
Right.
And if you do have this thing that comes in from the side, upends your planning, because people are like, do you know who you work for? You work for Majestic. And, you know, and they lay out all the, you know, how can you do this? You need to come over to our side. The right players will just bring that on board and say, now I got both these things I have to worry about.
Right.
We got to get the thing. And the reason why this is on my list, and maybe I don't think it tops the list, but it's got to be close for things that I want to do that I haven't done yet. I think this is an incredibly rich vein to mine, from the double agent part of it, where your handler is actually working for the Outlaws. So they are sending teams ahead of you to places. And that factors into some shotgun scenario ideas that I have and that sort of thing. So like, I have not read an opera where you are like head to head with the program,
right?
The cowboy or the outlaws and the program kind of thing. So that's incredibly rich. But we talked about it before, like the whole like the opera might be to go and get the outlaw and pick them up because they know some things and they want them to interrogate them. Like there's just so much you could get to, whether it's people who are inside the organization you don't know about that you're trying to root out, or it is a long running brother own opera that Delta Green gets involved in at the very end and you don't understand it and you fuck it up for them or you ruin it for them, excuse my language. There's just so many ways you could go, and I don't see even the operas that should have this stuff in there. It doesn't seem to be for the published stuff. So it seems to be something that the handler needs to take on themselves and develop their whole own sort of set of stakes and things that are happening and that kind of thing, including the whole, we talked about it before, the shared green boxes that they both know about, the shared assets. So when you go to see the museum person who's an expert in the field, they also work with the cowboys and they don't know the difference, or with the outlaws, I should say, right?
Right.
There's just so much you can do.
Yeah, I agree. Jeff, as soon as he was approached, he's like, we got to leave. We got to get out of here. They're gonna come in and they're going to whack us. They're like, we're done. He's like, we got to find another place. The other player character is like, what are you talking about? Why? What's the big deal? And I don't know if Jeff is privy as educated himself on the dynamics. And so he kind of knows whether he has or not, he's playing it close to the chest and just doing it from a character perspective. Like, we need to get out of here because they think we're compromised or what have you, it's going to be bad news and they're just going to wipe us off the face of the earth, which leads them to take their, like, go leave the hotel, get in a car. Like, what car do you have? Like, we're going to ditch the car. We need a new car. Where do you get the new car? We go to the airport. We steal a car. Like, it's just, and then the whole vignette of trying to kind of scrub their tail, if you will, from this.
That's awesome. That's the game.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that way, and we'll see if it works and how that dynamic is going to be, because one of the things I had thought about, I don't know if this is going to be a spoiler because I may not implement it, and I don't know how much of the show Jeff listens to, but, you know, one of the things I have to do is, like, I got to get specifically, like, Joe to get out of the mind frame that this is just a job, and then once, well, you know, if they've got the A team coming in, I'm done. Like, okay, hey, here you go. I'll hand it off to you. Like, no, dude. So I'm thinking about, you know, what happens when a bond, like, oop, yeah, that bond's gone. They're gone. Like, they're gone. The obit hits your phone. Somebody texts you, right? Like, that's, and, you know, with that is, yeah, it's sent from the guy who met with you to let you know that that has occurred or whatever, to even amp it up some way or somehow to tie it into things where it's now, it's like even more of a personal component. So, you know, I'm playing with guys that have, in Impossible Landscapes, there's a 20-year jump and they've been on 3 ops even before Impossible Landscapes and none of them know each other, but that's the way it is. Like, you know what I'm saying, Harrigan? It's like, so have you guys ever mentioned to each other who you actually are and work for or where you come from? No. So in 4 years on these 3 ops that have occurred that make you go
that
kind of
unlikely.
Bonkers, you've never been in a car that have brought up a conversation. No.
Do any of them have bonds with each other?
They don't, and I should have done that.
Remember,
sure.
There's that rule that says when certain things happen,
yes,
you have to roll to avoid, otherwise you just get the bond,
yes,
right?
Yeah, but they would still go, but we haven't talked about it, right? Jeff and Joe's characters were on a similar operation. They just didn't know each other ever. Like, Joe is the helicopter pilot assigned, right? And Jeff was on the mission as a soldier, and it went sideways. And that could have came up in a conversation where they were like, you were in the military? Yeah. Where'd you serve? Here. Did you ever make it over to here? Yeah. Like, that happens all the time in war stories I mean, I'm speaking firsthand. But but in the game, no. I'll never bring it up. I'm like, come on.
Part of that, I think, comes from the game time, like your energy is spent on the operations, on the operas.
Right.
It's a further extrapolation of what you and I have complained about and we're both guilty of it as well. When you don't focus enough on the cleanup phase as well.
Right.
Like, it's much more about, like, investigation, action, resolution, like, get the shit done, get the thing done, right?
You go in the dungeon, you knock down the doors, you open the door, you search the room, you see the gold, you grab the gold, you get a monster, you kill the monster, you go back, and you level up.
GTFO.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Like, that's Delta Green. Get the get the briefing.
Things like Impossible Landscapes, they facilitate that in some ways that maybe aren't the best because there's this, like, time jump and whatnot. So you can easily leave behind what happened because time has passed in the game.
Right.
As opposed to, did people see us coming out of that building when we lit it on fire? And do we have to go make sure they didn't see too much? Like, all the things, because it's on that, like, time scale where it's like moving on. Now it's this date. And when do they have time to do what you're talking about, which is sit down and share war stories and bond with each other and all that kind of stuff, right?
I have to imagine that the next edition, which they are playtesting, as my understanding, you and I got wind of that.
Mm-hmm.
So in case anybody wants to know.
The next edition of the game.
Right. I would imagine somewhere in the mix there is a vignette component. Savage Worlds had interludes, is what they're called. That those will inevitably play a role. So when you're driving 3 hours into the frickin' foothills of BFE.
Correct.
You guys are quiet for an entire 2.5 hours.
So not between operas. During the opera, there are these moments of, like, character development in, you know, connection. I'm with you. That would be, and, you know, we don't need a new version of the game to do that. We can implement that.
We don't. Right. But you could do the you could use the Savage Worlds little nuance where I think it's like Savage Worlds has a deck of cards. In interludes, there is hearts, spades, diamonds, and clubs, the suits. And based, you flip a card, and based on the suit, it prompts you for...
Right. What's this little scene about?
Yeah, yeah. Tell them, like, something about your home life comes up. What,
yeah.
What do you divulge?
I think that's a... Dude, that's a gold mine you just uncovered there. That would be awesome.
Dude, I'm
that's what this game
diamonds needs. Over here, Harrigan. Finally. Just one, though. A little small one.
Clunk. There it is. Finally! The rest of it, not so nice.
Bound up for quite some time.
Yes, that's right. You've been chewing coal for a while. Carbon.
I have.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Last thing on this whole Two Shades of Green thing, like, just there's just these threads that, for me, just naturally come out of it. Where, like, for example, let's say things go south with you. You're a program agent, and you have gotten burned. They are coming for you. The outlaws will pick you up. Like, they'll be like, hey, there's this other team over here. Like, there's so many ways to like interleave these things and get them to work together. And you know, the presumption I'm making this whole conversation is that you work for the program. That doesn't have to be true. Flip it. You're an outlaw the whole time, right? And we've talked about it before. Like, you might not even know there's a program. And in fact, you think they're just majestic still. You know, that whole angle, right? So I've got. Again, that gets to some of the things I'll talk about in a bit around some of my shotgun ideas, which are maybe the program's not as altruistic as you think it is, right? Maybe there's some people inside the program who are getting you to go on operas and do some things that maybe aren't that great, right? So Sean, what's your second of the three things you'd like to do in Delta Green that you haven't done yet?
Try to convey to the player... or implement something that highlights their downward spiral of their sanity or humanity. So we brought up, I think, one example during a show where, or somebody else did, I think, actually, in a letter that they wrote in on an encrypted comm where it was, they think they're married. They... at some point the letter is, I wish you would stop, you know, we cut off ties, I wish you would stop writing or calling. But in the game, it's like the bond is on the sheet, it's listed, it's not severed, but they're not really, like, they were divorced 2 or 3 years ago.
I think what you're referencing is the call that Anthony placed. Runeslinger had a
That's right.
Situation when we said, give us, write in or call in with examples of your own home scenes that are, that explore some of these damaged relationships, right? And he had the one where he went to his wife who was remarried, and the character had like flowers and like, I know how to make it all better kind of thing. And the new husband answers the door and Anthony's character beat the crap out of him on the porch.
Yeah.
And then you and I had a whole discussion over whether, and I think, you know, looking back at that, I think Anthony was the player in that game, not the handler.
Oh,
I think he played that character who did the front door knock sort of thing. You and I mused about what would it take for this reality shift that you just mentioned a minute ago, which is the whole, like, you think you're married, but you're not. In your mind, I can also picture horrible things where you're like, I have to go to Philadelphia because my daughter's in the gymnastics. Your daughter's dead, dude. She was killed in the car accident last year. And you don't have that. I love this, actually, Sean. You were talking in the same episode about how people who struggle with this type of mental illness don't always know it. Some, you know, and we've all got experience with people who have struggled in various ways, right, through our lives. And in some cases, you do get to a place where they know there's a problem, but they can't help it anyway, or they're trying to address it, but they can't. But there's also situations where it's so acute and so deep, you find yourself in Philadelphia at the gym and being like, what do you mean my daughter's not on the team? Right. And they're like, oh, my God. And, you know, she died last year in the bus accident, you know, kind of thing. Right. Like, Yeah, man. I mean to take over here. Keep going.
No, that's exactly it. And even going into that gymnastics example that you mentioned, like maybe that gymnastics event happens every year. And it happened to be the first thing that occurred after the daughter's death was this gymnastics event that they were both going to go to, father or mother that you were going to attend. And that, like, that's when your brain, like your mental capacity is split. And every year you show up at that same event because it's like in your mind on the calendar. And you go and they're like not on the team, and the coaches or the staff, when you walk in the room, everybody looks and everything gets very awkward.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the third time you do it, they might call the cops, right?
Right. Yes.
Because you might be like, where's my daughter? You know, that kind of, right?
Yeah, for sure. So those kind of examples I would like to implement, and keeping track of, we had talked about this also as, having a spreadsheet of your player characters if you're the handler, and then writing down the events that are chipping away at them through a scenario and what that looks like. And if it's 4-1 or, they brushed it onto a bond or they absorbed it or whatever, keeping track of those things that you can implement kind of borderline delusions into their lives in order to.
It makes it become more than numbers of just the bond going down and the sanity going down.
Correct.
Like what happened? What is driving it? What's the result of that? And whether you use your example of a spreadsheet just now, I think what I recommended earlier in the season was like a little black book or a little moleskin or lechterm. You have a lechterm, whatever. You have a book that is dedicated to the character's bonds. So you are literally, you have a compact version of the notes of what happened in the interludes of the downtime scenes, and what the projecting onto the bond does, like all that stuff in one spot, as opposed to trying to find it throughout your notes, especially if it's a long running campaign. Spreadsheet's a great idea too, but I think crystallizing this information is important.
It's so great when in the game, I know in the rules it says you do it between sessions and during the quote unquote downtime, but I think it's fantastic if you can do it while the operation's happening and it's a phone call, an email, like especially in the modern day. Here's the thing, what I love.
Yeah, a text.
Yeah, I think one thing we talk about, we haven't really gone in. I mean, we touched on the eras and when you want to place your game, but it's, so me personally, I was like, oh, I'm going to, when I talked to Jeff getting Delta Green off the ground, one of the questions that typically comes up when you're going to do that is what era or what year you're going to start kick this off in. Mm-hmm. And I think some people were like, oh, I'm going to kick this off in 1980. There's no technology. There's no Google Maps. There's no internet. They're not going to be able to reference everything that's just at the tip of your finger, and you've got a portable computer the size of your palm of your hand, and that can be a different dynamic.
You mean a Palm Pilot? Is that what you mean?
A Palm Pilot, yes.
That's what I thought. That's what I thought you meant.
Right. BlackBerry or whatever. It's a cellular phone from the 90s, right? The satellite phones. So there is that dynamic that's like, oh, because I don't want them to just look up everything and have the answer because they have the internet, which I think is a dynamic, which is fine. But there is also something to be said about, yep, it's 2025 and you've got everything that everybody else has at their disposal, which means that they can be tracked, that they can have calls at any time and text messages. And, I had breakfast with a group that I grew up with last week, Kerrigan, and one of them, I don't know if he works for the FBI. I know he works in law enforcement, Justice Department level stuff, and he's not a cop. He is a couple levels higher. He carries 3 cell phones.
I've never seen someone do that. 2 is pretty common, but
three cell phones, apparently. We were joking about it briefly, but we didn't get into his career or anything, but he's like, yeah.
You're doing sensitive stuff.
Yeah. So one's all locked down, and I'm sure, and then one is probably borderline, and then one is his own. But going to what I'm getting at is if you put it in the modern day, I mean, how many people always, like, if you don't have this in your hand, some people, like, as I hold up my cell phone, they feel completely naked and like, I am lost. I panic. And so if you put that into a Delta Green game, great. What happens when people start texting you on an operation wondering where you are? And, oh, by the way, you cheated on me last time or whatever. I think you're cheating. So I'm going to enable location services, and you do that out of trust. And then they're
or
like,
or you turn it off.
Or
so
you
they
turn
don't know.
It off. Right.
And
right.
Speaking from personal family, like, why'd you turn it off, kid? Where'd you go?
Right. Right. Glad you said kid, not hair again. Yeah. Right.
No, my wife and I have it on all the time, dude. We're good.
Yeah. Yeah. Same. Same. And, but it's that question of like, why did you do that? And then where does that come from? And how it just propels things.
This is where, you know, the you know, by now it's a tired thing that we're saying, where you open the front door and you walk outside and you're in the right. You're in the world of Delta Green,
right.
As long if you add the underlying seething cosmic horror, because you can take these moments from your own life. Like, my daughter will send me voicemails. I don't know why she does it, but we text all the time, but sometimes she'll take it upon herself to make a recording. And she sends me the voice recording, and you can just picture getting these things in the field. When, you know, I had in a, we couldn't return in time, and you get the hey dad, we had the event, I graduated and wish you were here, right? And there's the bond going from 7 to 6, right? Like what you're talking about. Yeah, we've all got real world experiences where we can apply that stuff, where you wish something hadn't happened, and technology gives you like a direct view into it in real time, almost, right? Sending a video from the event you're missing, kind of thing.
And I have to say, touching on this being my number, my 2 of 2 or 2 of 3, I don't know, whether it is not even sanity pieces or components as much as it is the bonds, because in the game, as we went through, many of us are, okay, I'm going to whittle down my bond. And it's very much, are you going to project? Yes, I am. Okay, roll. Okay, I project 4. I take 1 sanity. And my bond goes down 4. And I take a will hit. Okay, done. And then, of course, I think most of us are very much at some point in time incorporating that somehow. Maybe some are better than others. But to your point, Harrigan, like, there's things in the book that says you can just wipe a bond gone.
Yes.
And I think that we're not leveraging that as much. And so I could just say, oh, well, Joe's character was in the military. It's 10 years forward. Do you still have those bonds? He would say, oh, I keep in touch with a couple of them. I could just say, no, you don't. They have all abandoned you just because 10 years have gone by. So erase that, put a line through it, right? Don't erase it. Put a line through it. And then tell me who you've recuperated as a bond in the last 10 years, because his character became more of a hermit.
Dude, it can be much worse than that too.
It can. Like, yes.
You could have a bond who has a substance abuse problem.
Right.
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 And you have been
their sponsor, but
you've been projecting onto that bond, so you've been lowering it. And then the handler, this is to your point of the handler, there's more to it than just the projection and the one that helps you prevent insanity. There's more to it than that. Let's say you project and you take it from 10 down to 6, right, over the course of the opera. And then there's a downtime between operas, and you choose to not interact with that bond to repair it or anything. So you don't see that person. And then you do another opera, and it gets lowered by another 2 points. The handler within their right to say they OD'd, they're dead. You didn't look after them. You didn't check in. You didn't see them. They called you, and you didn't call them back. So you didn't have to get the bond from 5 down to 0. You can use a luck roll. You can do all, you know, you can do all sorts of, like, you can get the dice out if you want to. But to your point, like things can happen without just relying on the mechanics of the bonds coming down tied to the sanity part
right.
of it. Right.
So that's one thing I would say I would want to focus in on just a tad bit more. Those two were the big flagships for me. The third one I couldn't really come up with that I was thinking of. So, because, you know, I'm doing everything else, you know, A-okay, I guess. I know.
Well, see, after I describe my 2 and 3, you see if anything else occurs to
sure.
you.
Sure.
And, you know, the first one, we both want to run something with a better interaction of the classic program post 2001 and the outlaws that are around them kind of thing. And you can even do some stuff in the 90s too, I guess, but we both want to do more with that, right? Sean, you want to do more with, how would you describe your second one? What's the thumbnail?
I think there might be two things actually. So I might have three in the end. One would be maybe to look at those bonds a little closer, other than much more of a mechanical or home scene vignette piece, right? Like something a little more.
And the connection between the characters you talked about and, yeah.
Yeah, that. And then I would say the sanity or diminishment of a person's humanity and how that actually is facilitated from the game master. And because I think it's easy for the players to kind of sideswipe that a little bit. And then it's not, I don't blame them because it's just not a game that they're used to playing. So when you say, yeah, you hear something in your head, like I've had that, you know, we've had scenes like that where it's like, oh, the bag is talking to you.
Right? Have you had a character in your current game hit a breaking point yet?
Oh, yeah. Joe's hit a few. So, yeah.
And has he picked up disorders?
He does, but disorders are interesting. The answer is yes. And then, you know, there's the, can you sleep? That's usually very much in the moment. But there's also like when they hit their breaking point again, it can re-trigger the initial
disorder. Well, what I'm getting at, it goes back to your I guess your second idea here. So your third idea overall.
Right.
But your second idea of the handler helping the players kind of explore what all this looks like, right? Don't forget, and maybe you're already all over this, but when they get the disorder, they lose the motivation, right? So there should be a very tangible thing on the character sheet that changes that says, what's different now? Hmm. You no longer have this motivation. So you're not going to Alcoholics Anonymous anymore. You're not looking for your long lost brother anymore. All that stuff. So I think that leans into what you're talking about, which is the handler saying, let me pick at your sheet for a minute. Hey, I see your sanity is down to 30 and you've hit your breaking point three times and you've lost these three motivations. You picked up these three disorders. Let's talk about how that's manifesting in the game, because some players they're not going to dive into that, right? You want the players that do, but some players just haven't played that way before. And they just need a little bit of a hand up sort of thing. Okay, so I asked you all that because I think it kind of flows into my second idea. Unlike you, I have not run the long game before. So I've only run the equivalent of one shots or one opera at a time. So I've never done a lot of home scene work. I've never done a lot of like slow, gradual decline, the downward spiral that we talked about. So I don't have a ton to say about it today, but it's basically I want to do a lot more with home scenes, a lot more with bonds and how they get rebuilt. Like I've never seen in action repairing your sanity either by going on the road trip or the ski trip or going scuba diving, like all that stuff where you neglect some other responsibilities, but you help yourself out in some ways. And I'm really interested in seeing how that plays out in the long term. And I'm a little troubled because, quite frankly, play by post, which I love, is so slow. I'll never get to this stuff. I mean, I'll get to it in the solo game that I'm playing in. We will do this stuff, but that might be next year. You know, it takes a while. So, you know, maybe our Thursday night crew needs to turn to this game at some point and do the long version of it kind of thing, right? So I don't have a whole lot more to say other than I want, it ties into this slow slide and disintegration that we've always talked about. Everything that I've seen typically is a little more real time in terms of the impacts. Impossible Landscapes is maybe a little bit different because it's a lengthy, beefy campaign. So we got to see more of that. But I think we were both new enough to Delta Green at that point that we didn't explore all the edges and angles that you and I have identified on this show that we want to get into. Right?
For sure.
All right. So the long game is basically my second one. Anything you want to add to that, or should I go on to my third?
No. And I would say with the long game specifically, obviously you can explore more in those things, but also with I know you alluded to it, but even just increasing your skills, right? Like I'm going to go and take a college course.
Absolutely.
And there's a mechanic where you can increase a skill. You go to a college or whatever and take a course, and then your bond goes down. because you're spending too much time at
school. But your skills go up.
But your skills go up, yeah.
Yeah, it's this decision-making that the players have that is not immediately evident upon, like when you sit down at a con and you play in a Delta Green game, you have no idea that any of that stuff is there. It's almost like playing in a Pendragon game at a con. It's like, man, you are seeing like the top inch of a very deep lake.
Yes, know? It is very the D&D if you only play a one shot in Pendragon, where that's not the where it shines. Yeah.
And you know, I don't know. I just those are the parts of the game that I haven't personally explored, so they are of great interest to me, is what I would say. Okay, then do you have a third, or should I just go for my third?
I think
you tapped out.
I mean, I think it's the three.
You bifurcated the second one into two different pieces.
That's right.
Okay, you'll get points for that. last one is easy for me to describe as well, and I've talked about it before. I want to write shotgun scenarios. So, and I have not done that yet. I had two ideas last year for the 2025 shotgun scenario contest. I came up this morning with two other ideas. So I've got, and a lot of that was based on, you know, just preparing for today. And quite frankly, the relay writing jam made me think about my hometown. And I'm like, I think I want to do more than just come up with the location and the kernel. I want to write an adventure based on this, these two locations that are in my hometown. Basically, Halifax, it was a very important military port and fort in the 18th and 19th centuries. And there are rumors of tunnels connecting fortifications all over the cities. And I've done work in these fortifications when I was an archaeologist there. So, you know, I've been in some pretty lonely, empty places exploring down with a coworker trying to find if these tunnels were real or not. So there's a whole, there's like the, it's kind of like the Denver airport where there's rumors of like lizard men living beneath the airport. If you know those conspiracy theories, Halifax has a lot of like lore about the connectivity between the forts where the British soldiers could run back and forth. And I mean, some of the forts are in the harbor and some are like the main fort on the land kind of thing. So there's some cool stuff I think I'm planning on doing with that. So all of that, I think I'll translate into a couple of different, shotgun scenario. So I'm looking forward to that this coming year. I think it's in, was it like October, November timeframe last year?
I can't remember. But
I'll look at it.
We have steam tunnels.
Yeah. There you go. Back in Madison.
Yeah. Steam tunnels. And then there's the rumored Steam Tunnel Bob. So Steam Tunnel Bob. I don't know if he exists or not. Some say he does, some say he doesn't. But he knew the steam tunnels so well that they would pay him or give him money. I believe Steam Tunnel Bob is a homeless gent, but they would pay him to change the light bulbs because he knew where everything was in the steam tunnels. Yep. But I don't know.
There's your kernel. There's your location.
There. Yeah. What lies in the depths.
Exactly. So a couple of ideas have occurred, but the bottom line is I need to put pen to paper this time and actually get the submissions done, and I'll feel good about that.
I would like to as well, although I'm not a big writer. I journal because I feel as though I don't know, it's kind of...
Shotguns are short though, man, like 1,500 words or whatever, right?
Yeah, so. I think I would have to figure out how to not be as verbose and get some, you know, get to the point.
You do have to get to the point, it's true. I have some ideas actually even around formatting. So let's tie this all together and put a bow on top. I think the shotgun should be like bulleted text at the top. Like, what era is this? What part of Delta Green are you working for? And like three or four like factual, like let's get this going and embed it. It's 2002. You're working for the Outlaws. You're in D-cell. You know what I mean? That kind of thing to ground it a bit more. Many of them seem to be written like, I don't know. You're some part of some Delta Green. I don't know what year it is and doesn't matter. Like, let's put some teeth in that.
Your briefing is in, you know, you're okay. Briefing.
Yep.
Done. Like, and then it goes. But to your point, and I think that's a great approach.
So, and you know, like I've raved about them before. Rob Schwalb does these like 6-page adventures for Shadow of the Demon Lord, for Shadow of the Weird Wizard, that are just, there's just enough on the page to like fire the imagination. And like, ooh, I know what I can do with that without him going into gory detail about everything, right? I see the shotguns the same way. So you can picture the shotgun being like this is your handler. Here's her name. Here's how she fits in. And like last line of that paragraph would be like, by the way, she's an informant for the outlaws. And then you just move on, right? Like the handler picks that up and does what they want with it, tying it into the wider campaign, making that, ooh, this is a key feature of this mission now, because you're going to run across another team while you're in the field. Or they're like, oh, that's interesting. I'll just keep that in mind for the future. If she's the handler again and they tell her certain things, the outlaws find out about that. Like, this is where the spider web starts to like take shape, right? Cool stuff, man.
Yeah, and there's things that you, and it's those things that a handler can reference in the handler's guide that they don't need to know all of the details. They just need to know that one bullet so that they can tie it back to the details. I think that's fantastic.
Yep. So you just got to be succinct about that stuff as well. Like, and let's say, for example, you can even get into the whole, like, if the players are going to use a vehicle to run over this thing, see the vehicle rules on page duh. Like that, kind of like, just make the right references and call outs. Anyway, I don't want to go into it any further. I just basically, I feel like I'm sitting on my butt with these ideas, and I want to get them out there.
Yeah.
That's all I got, man.
Well, that's fantastic. So there you go. If you're going to play my game, you just can imagine what's coming.
Yeah. Yep. We'll see if your players listen to this.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thanks so much for tuning in to Go Bag. On behalf of my esteemed colleague Harrigan, I'm Sean. We'll catch you on the next one. See ya. This episode of Go Bag, produced with help from the following friendlies, field operatives, special agents, and black ops directors: Joe Swick, Roger French, Merkel Froelich, Tony Sugarloaf Baker, Polish Ogre, Hoos Carl, Farty McButterpants, Laramie Wall, Eileen Barnes, Hepta Lima, Aaron Relia, Wayne Peacock, Jeff Walken, Yorkus Rex, Eric Salzwedel, Phil McClory, Jason Hobbs, Michael Holland, Remy Bilodeau, Crystal Eggstad, Erica Villa, Vornak, Brian Kurtz, Chad Glayman, Jim Ingram, Orcus Dorcas, Chris Shorb, Brian Rumble, Victor Wyatt, Kevin Keneally, Andy Hall, Jason Weitzel, Salt Hart, Tad Lechman, Nicholas Abruzzo, Matthew Catron, Curtis Takahashi, Angela Murray, Mr. White 20, Jason Connerly, Shannon Olson, Ryan West, Kristen McLean, Larry Hollis, Len Seal, Jake at Faded Quill Gaming, Tess Trekkie, Tim Jensen, Nubis, Christopher Lang, Qualog, Peter Skanes, Wendy Forcon, James, Fraser Ronald, Dirigible, Chaplain Grimaldus, and Mark Mekes. Thank you, operatives.